Sunday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and therefore, from high above beautiful Lake Osceola in downtown Jefferson Valley, New York, the John Mack Radio Show is on the air. Well, good evening. This is John McMullen. Welcome you to the 90th episode of the John Mack Radio Show. My most recent column for Westchester Guardian is at website www.westchesterguardian.com. It is 164th column in the Creative Disruption series. But I hope you'll read the columns, enjoy them, and if the spirit moves you, comment to me at johnmack13@gmail.com. And John Mack is J-O-H-N-M-A-C. That's johnmack13@gmail.com. You'll find links to the previous radio shows in this series and to my online daily newspaper at my web home, www.johnmack13.com. The list of upcoming shows is also at the site. My guest next week is mystery writer Andrew Gross. And now to this show, the 90th in the series. Callers may call in at any time during this show by dialing 646-716-9756. That's 646-716-9756. So I do hold the online participation of callers to near the end of the conclusion of my interview with my guest. My guest tonight is the supervisor of the town of Yorktown, Westchester County, New York, and old basketball buddy Michael Grace. I first met Mike on the basketball court possibly 15 to 20 years ago, and we both had knee surgery performed by the same surgeon, Dr. Stephen Small, the previous guest on the show. I saw Mike most recently within the last 2 weeks at the groundbreaking of the Outreach Center at St. Mary's Episcopal Church in Mohegan Lake, one of the hamlets and villages to make up the town of Yorktown. We'll explore Mike's interesting background tonight on the John Mack Radio Show. Good evening, Mike. Welcome to the show.
Hey, John, how you doing?
I'm doing very well. I hope you are.
Yeah, I think it was probably a lot longer than 15 years ago we were playing hoops.
Yeah, 25, yeah.
Yeah.
But let's start at the beginning. Where exactly did you grow up and go to early school?
I grew up on Staten Island, New York, of all places. So I attended Monsignor Farrell High School out there.
I know Monsignor Brothers.
Yeah,
yep.
Very good football team. They were one of the top teams in the country when I was there. And grew up on Staten Island, and then went to college at Fordham, where my father was a professor for 43 years. So he was been there for since I said started teaching there in 1943.
And, what did he teach?
He taught English. Shakespeare and Milton were his specialties. And Renaissance literature.
And he never moved closer to the campus than Staten Island, huh?
You know, he worked at the 30 when Fordham was at 305 Broadway.
Right.
In Lower Manhattan. And then they eventually moved to Lincoln Center. But he started teaching in 1943 down in 305 Broadway.
Yeah, I opened up the doors of the Lincoln Center Law School. I went evenings for a year before I wisely moved to technology.
I went to the evening program at Fordham.
Yeah,
Law
Dean
School.
Mulligan was the dean when I was there.
Mm-hmm.
What were your earliest aspirations? Did you want to be a lawyer from the beginning?
Not necessarily. I had a certain curiosity. I was working on Wall Street in a brokerage house, Kidder Peabody, which is now defunct, but was one of the bigger private brokerage firms on Wall Street. And I decided that I would go to law school in the evening. Well, I worked at the brokerage house during the day. So
yeah, I, kn- I knew Kidder well. I had been with Morgan Stanley, and then Barbara McMillan and I formed our own consulting firm, and we did consulting to a bunch of people. And I believe the computer processing person there was Peter Mastrangelo, who was a very nice person. What did you do at Kidder?
I was in charge of the back office operations and stock clearing for all the different exchanges. And did that while I went to law school at night. And then after that, after graduating law school, I ended up joining a personal injury medical malpractice plaintiffs firm in the that was at the Woolworth Building down in Lower Manhattan.
When Kidder went belly up, I remember there was one person who later worked with me for Davis and Computer Services, Mike Vivona. He was he had the bonus paid till the end to stay there to help clean up, but I'm not sure if many people stayed till the very end.
They ran into some. I guess they. I left before they went. Yeah, they had some major problems, and I can't remember exactly what it was, but I left before they wrapped things up as well.
And,
started doing plaintiff's trial work in the Supreme Courts of the five counties down there and a little bit upstate.
I saw before that you're a philosophy and an economics major. I was a philosophy major for a year, but I didn't see many ads in the New York Times for philosophers.
But
I switched.
It's a good,
Oh, yeah. I switched to something much more practical, to English literature. And then obviously went up in technology. As for economics, I always wished that I had had a better course that I own in economics. I had a good grad school course in it. But I think that the two things that are the most lacking in my background are economics and physics. They both became so important in the 1990s and 2000. How did you happen to pick economics?
I'm not necessarily quite remember why I ended up in there. I liked philosophy. I liked the political philosophy. I actually was on the honors program down there, and where you do a doctoral type thesis as an undergraduate. And I did it in political philosophy, actually on John Locke's theory of property, which is some of the a lot of the Jeffersonian writings were based. So it was, that's what I enjoyed, and I guess I enjoyed the political philosophy, and I guess I probably figured that the economics was a little bit more practical than just being a philosophy major.
But that also took you over into economics. You just mentioned John Locke, obviously.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, economic theory, and absolutely.
You're a member of the New York State Bar, and you admitted to federal practice all the way up to the Supreme Court. What's involved in the federal admittance?
When you take the bar, depending on how obviously having passed it, then you can seek admission into the federal courts, and each district is a separate admission, and actually it's not only the district court that you have to be admitted to, but then if you're going to argue appeals in the federal system, you have to be admitted to the appellate courts as well. So I'm also admitted to the Circuit Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit, as well as the U.S. Supreme Court.
I've argued
cases in the Second Circuit Court of Appeals, yes, and actually appealed cases to the U.S. Supreme Court as well. So
that must be interesting. then it must be rather formidable too to be involved in that. Yeah.
Well, yeah, it was an interesting. It was a fairly significant civil rights case, but that I had tried in the Southern District of New York. So, which is actually was a fascinating case, Fourth Amendment case, but unfortunately didn't go my way at the end of the day. But
do you want to go into the case? Do you want to go into
actually,
the
you know what? We would be here all night.
Okay.
Talking about that one, it had to do with an arrest and the use of deadly physical force, and a motorcycle stop.
Okay.
Essentially, the theory was that it was some state troopers that wanted to stop some motorcycles, and they used roadblocks to do it, and precipitated in the death and serious personal injury of several of the motorcyclists. The offense for which the police action was taken was a purported speeding, of which there wasn't much evidence of to begin with. But I guess in this day and age, if you're driving on a ninja bike, you're already, you're not entitled to due process, unfortunately, out there.
What brought you to Yorktown?
That's more happenstance than anything else. I worked as a trial attorney in New York City, and there was a takeover of the firm that I was in. And I went to a firm in Newburgh, New York, that had a medical malpractice practice and needed an attorney to do some trial work. And my wife at the time was a teacher of the deaf in Yonkers. And between Newburgh and Yonkers lies Yorktown. And that's sort of why I set up shop in Yorktown.
After locating in Yorktown, you also performed various legal services for the town, including a stint as town attorney. Could you tell us about those duties?
What happened was when I was working for the firm in Newburgh, I had some very good successes up there and we got the first plaintiff's verdict in Orange County in a medical malpractice case in half a dozen years. And that evolved in myself looking to go out of my own practice. And at the same time, the town was looking for an attorney. I think they were looking for a litigator more than they were anything else. And that just happened to fit the bill. And I began doing work for the town, I think it was 86 or 87, where Nancy Elliott was the town supervisor. And continued in various capacities with the town for 13, 16 years or something like that. Was counsel to the Zoning Board of Appeals, to the town board, and actually was their litigation counsel. So I defended or brought lawsuits on behalf of the town in all sorts of different types of cases, one of them being a federal Clean Water Act case that was brought by the Hudson Riverkeeper against the town for its sewer plant up on Greenwood Street. So had quite varied litigation with the town, from everything from personal injury to the Federal Clean Water Act, land use, everything else in between. So
I know that you formed the law firm of Grace and Grace in 1990.
Yep.
I met your partner and brother a number of years ago when I did the poetry reading in the tea room in Pelham.
Is he older? Nice. Yeah, he's older. We were Irish twins.
And what was his legal background? Was it also Fordham?
Yeah. He's a Fordham grad, and he's 11 months older than me, and we've been best friends and. Brother, you know, and partners for the entire duration. So, and we complement each other where he has where his strengths are, my weaknesses are, and vice versa. So, we complement each other very well. And it's been a very good relationship.
For the audience, the term Irish twins means two people born within the same calendar year. It's an old Irish designation. Is there a particular concentration of Grace and Grace?
We do litigation. Mostly personal injury for the plaintiff. So that's the person that is injured. We've done very specialized type of personal injury cases. So we've done medical malpractice cases. We do a lot of them. We do highway design, products liability, vehicle design, we have cases from we've had cases from Richmond County all the way to Buffalo, and almost every place in between. At some point in time.
After Grace and Grace had been in existence for over 20 years, then you had worked in various capacities for the town of Yorktown, you get into elective politics by challenging the incumbent supervisor in a party primary. What brought on that move?
Oh, well, my law office is somewhat conveniently located right across from Town Hall in Yorktown. And as the old town attorney, I guess people, come to me to at various times seeking advice. And when a couple of years back, what would happen on a fairly regular basis, people would go to town hall and they would get a little frustrated as to what would happen to them over there, and they would walk across the street and come to my office, which is an old Victorian house with outfitted with nice old oriental rugs and very comfortable and welcoming a place. And they'd all sit down and kvetch about what the treatment they got over at town hall. And I guess try to elicit my help in their woes. And I kind of made it a point not to get involved in the town business when I had left as town attorney and focused on my own practice. But it was getting to a point where even I thought that things were a bit out of hand in the town, and felt that the town was generally going in the completely wrong direction. So I added my two cents into the discussion, and ended up finding myself swept up in the local politics, and decided that to run for supervisor.
And you won that election. Did I mention earlier that Mohegan Lake is one of the hamlets and villages in the town of Yorktown? I live in another Jefferson Valley. Could you explain the town of Yorktown to the audience? What comprises it? What's the budget?
Yeah, Yorktown is actually, I think it's one of the top 25 municipalities within the state of New York, believe it or not. I think it's one of the sixth largest municipality in Westchester County. 40 square miles. It's about 40,000 residents. It's got a budget of $56 million with a police department, water district, sewer districts. And it's it goes from pretty much the Putnam County line to just a little bit south of where IBM Watson Research Center is located. To the west is the town of Cortland, and to the east is the town of Somers. Yorktown is rectangularly shaped, and it's quite varied. It includes the hamlets of Jefferson Valley, Mohegan Lake, Crom Pond, Yorktown Heights, Kitchewan, and has a lot of parkland and some very nice hamlets and business hubs, including the Heights area and Jefferson Valley and Mohegan Lake as the major ones.
Growing up in New York City, I understood mayor. What exactly are the duties of the supervisor? What is the role in the overall governance scheme of the town?
Yeah, I'm one member of a five-member board, and just like any other corporation, it has a board of directors. The town board is the board of directors for the Municipal Corporation, which is the town of Yorktown. Each member of the board having one vote where you conduct the business of the town. The supervisor, as opposed to the remaining board members, is that person that is in charge of the daily operations of the town. So I am the chief executive officer of the town, oversee all the departments, the department heads, and the day-to-day operations of the town. Unlike other municipalities, Yorktown does not have a village manager or a town manager or a city manager. The actual management duties of the town lies with the supervisor. So take care of everything from listening to what needs to be done in the grounds, keeping to sitting down and creating budgets for the town, doing the long-term planning with the town, getting involved in hopefully soliciting good investments, opportunities for people in the town, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a job that 24 hours in a day sometimes is not enough. It consumes an enormous amount of time and energy, you're never bored. There's always something to do, someplace to go, or someone to talk to, or a place to visit, and et cetera.
So if we can think of it as in the federal government, you'd be both the Speaker of the House, you'd be part of the legislative body, but you'd also be the president, the executive body.
Right.
Okay. The other thing that I find confusing, and this is the rather the long question, is the role of parties at the town level. The New York City and the state level, the parties, they're very distinguishable. The Democrats are more liberal, Republicans more conservative. Labor tends not always to support Democrats, and Republicans are considered more business-oriented. Having said that, when I had the former town supervisor of Putnam Valley, Sally Cipher, and the present supervisor of the same town, Bob Tendy, on separate episodes, they both emphasized that there is no Democratic or Republican way to clear the snow and other required duties of a town, and they spoke respectfully of each other. In Yorktown, though, Dave Pagnotelli ran for the town board as a Democrat. He lost, then ran as Republican, then won. The Nick Bianco, longtime conservative member of the council, ran against in a Republican primary, lost, and then ran as a Democrat in the general election. He lost again. Now, in the real world of politics, conservatives tend to be to the right of the Republican Party, and Democrats look to the left. Finally, the woman that you defeated in the Republican primary originally came back, and she won the election as the Democrat. There also seems to be more rancor and the nastiness in Yorktown politics than I got from Cipher and Tendy anyhow. Do parties mean anything in local politics? And am I correct about the nastiness?
Number one, I think the parties do make a difference. And I can explain how I see that. And two, you're not wrong about the nastiness. Unfortunately, there was a lot of rancor in the local politics, but I think because you had a clear difference in the vision between what really is the Republican brand in Yorktown and the Democratic brand in Yorktown. The Republican brand in Yorktown actually, quite frankly, is a hell of a lot more progressive than the Democratic brand in Yorktown, which is kind of remarkable and a reversal of the normal positions, as you would think, on the state and federal level. But the Republicans are also, are very progressive in terms of looking toward the future and the revitalization, redevelopment of the town, looking towards, trying to create a atmosphere for proper and quality investment in the town, which we think is necessary in order to stabilize the town economic health in the long run, especially as it relates to real estate taxes. So the Democrats have always, we kind of always kid, is the party of no. You know, they were very conservative in not in maintaining what was and really not looking towards the future development of the town. Gave, you know, most the projects were always met with a lot of headwind and complications, et cetera, et cetera. So, matter of fact, that's probably why I did get involved in the politics to begin with, is that I saw it as that the town really being an obstacle towards progress.
Well, if the party labels do mean something, how could Pagnotelli run as both a Democrat and a Republican? How could Bianchi be a conservative? I mean, Bianco be a conservative and then run a Republican primary and run as a Democrat? And how
I think you had some anomalies around there. That wasn't the standard fare. You know, Nick entered politics as a conservative. And then was on the board for, you know, 18 years, 20 years, whatever it was, towards the end of his career, really did not find a home with the Republicans just because he was philosophically at odds with them. So the last time he ran, when he actually challenged me as supervisor, he did it as a Democrat, which was much more akin to what his approach towards things in the town. He didn't find a home with the Republicans the last time he ran because he departed from their basic philosophical structure. Dave Paganelli, you know, as highway superintendent, he ran as a Republican. I think that is a much more policy neutral type of position than a town board. So I think in some respects you may be correct that party means. The party differences may be minimal when you get to highway superintendent. As to what Siegel, likewise, she did. You know, she ran first as a Republican because that's the only place that she could run. I think she was previously a Democrat. She won as a Republican. She only lasted one term. I primaried her in the second term, won 70-30 in the primary because she basically did not act as a Republican but acted as a Democrat and no longer found favor with the Republicans. She ran subsequently to fill a vacancy of Dave Paganelli as a Democrat, where she now is running again for re-election this year.
Okay. Another fairly long-winded question. When I moved up here 30-some-odd years ago, it was countrified, pre-mall, et cetera. Come to New York City, I was amazed to read in the local paper that the cows crossing Route 6 had backed up traffic.
Right.
Shortly after that, I met a woman from my old neighborhood, and she told me that she and her husband had been there for 13 years, but they were moving further upstate because they gotten too crowded there. I was completely flabbergasted by that remark. Since then, the Mall, Club Fit, Cortland Town Center, Dunkin' Donuts, Staples, another new addition that brought many valuable services to the community, while Route 6 traffic is a major annoyance. My publisher at the paper wanted me to implore you to bring Trader Joe's to Yorktown. She shops there in the city, and she hauls her groceries all the way up here. But at the same time, there's an article in today's local paper that there is a movement in Tuckahoe to prohibit chains, in this case, Subway, from the town. The quote was, "I moved here to get away from New York City, but I don't want New York City following me here."
Mm-hmm.
What is your vision for Yorktown? Are we a suburb, a standalone entity, both? What are we exactly?
Oh, I think it's kind of interesting. If you look at the local demographics, everything's kind of plateaued, over the last. I mean, there was growth in the 60s and 70s, and probably the last spurt was in the late 80s, and it's plateaued since then. And there really isn't a lot more that's developable. So there really isn't an opportunity for a lot of growth in the future, and I don't anticipate a lot of growth. So really, what the next phase it really should be just a rebuild and a revitalization of what presently exists, and that's really what the vision that we're looking at in Yorktown. As for instance, there was an application for a Costco to come in at the corner of the Taconic and 202, which was an old, presently exists an old dilapidated hotel site. So that isn't cutting into virgin or pristine landscape. That's just a repurposing of a old commercial piece that's been in dilapidated state and disrepair for decades. In terms of the Heights area, we'll look. Oh, sorry.
No. Will that happen? You said.
That should happen.
Okay.
That should happen. We're looking for the mall to they're redeveloping and hopefully that will occur very soon. And we gave them the approvals to do that. In the Heights area, we're looking to relocate our highway garage out of the Heights area, put it up by the sewer plant, and start to rebuild what was the old-time town center in Yorktown. It really is a matter of repurposing and revitalizing what presently exists, and not to continue what was decades of urban sprawl. I think the notion of urban sprawl is something that is now passé. It really is looking towards revitalizing the hamlet areas, and actually redeveloping them in with mixed uses, so that both commercial and residential use, retail, shopping, commercial, and residential all exist with very close proximity to each other.
There's been a story, I don't know how true it is, that for years, there used to be the restaurant in the mall, I like very much, but when it closed, they said all of the new people that wanted to come in, they wanted their own entrance to the outside,
right.
The town wouldn't let them have it. Now,
right.
Before that, there was this discount store upstairs that had its own entrance. When it went out into business, that entrance was closed off. But what's the truth to this own entrance deal? I mean, why do we care?
There lies you're right back to where you started, is what the differences in the parties were. And, a separate entrance way into the mall would have been considered a revision to a site plan for the mall, and they did want a door there, and actually it was town attorney at the time that they were looking to do that in order to that restaurant has been empty for decades.
Right.
The town resisted it, and leading the charge was Nick Bianco. And what happened is now when we came in my administration, what they're doing now is they're actually turning the mall inside out. So instead of having the mall with all interior entrance ways, they're going to flip it so that the exterior is going to have nothing but have storefronts to it. So there'll be an interior and exterior entrance ways for all the different stores.
Yeah, I could see the restaurant wanting to have its own, because the mall closes at 10 o'clock, it's deserted to walk into the mall just to get into the restaurant. Yeah, I can see that. Now, I also saw some opposition to the Costco, because they said it would take away from the business of the other store up the hill. Should the town be in the... being the business itself of protecting one business from a new guy coming in?
No, it'd actually be, there'll be legal issues with that anyhow. It'd be absolutely inappropriate. What the town has to do is take a look at, promoting, is adopting a vision for itself and promoting that. The Costco site was always planned to be a destinational commercial type use, which is really what a Costco is. So it's a regional draw. the criticism that's going to be a big black hole and suck the life out of the rest of the town of Yorktown is a little misplaced. But and just to give you some perspective to the listeners, Costco is about 150,000 square feet of retail space. The Cortland Town Center is 1.5 million square feet of retail space. So it's one-tenth the size of what's at the Cortland Town Center. So the demographics up here in terms of disposable income makes it very clear that most people are going outside the area to do shopping, because what they do is they look at the household income, they look at what normal people spend, they look at the demographic of what the disposable income is, and they look at the square feet of retail space in the area as to whether it supports that disposable income. And what you find is there's a big imbalance, which indicates that most of the shopping that of the people within the region is done outside of the region. So there is enough disposable income economic activity that will sustain a Costco plus a Cortland Town Center, probably an expanded Cortland Town Center, which is on the books for Cortland as well. What we're looking to do, my vision anyhow, is to really try to create a really viable and aesthetic downtown Yorktown Heights. A walkable, aesthetic downtown Yorktown, where it actually will be a draw because people will want to come here, and the main ingredient in that is really to relocate the highway garage out of there, create a town center at that site, importing hopefully either historical monument or some type of focus point. Connecting the linear park, making a linear park, connecting Railroad Park with Patriot Park, and actually, creating a draw where people are going to want to come because of not only the services, hopefully fine restaurants, but also its aesthetic qualities. And I think that's what you have to do. People go shopping for the experience. So if you create the right experience, you create the right ambiance, you're going to have people that are going to be drawn into your town and create economic activity.
That sounds like a big master plan. When I think of the various parks, the Railroad Park, and then I think of the old 6th grade school and the fields behind it, and then you have the triangle and stores and Triangle. Are you when you talk about revitalizing the Heights area, is it all of that that you're aiming at?
I think the problem with the Heights area is it lacks kind of a focal point or an identity. And I think, and what's remarkable about Yorktown Heights, it's a beautiful, beautiful town. It really is. It's surrounded by gorgeous land and the topography, the vegetation, everything is, but it just has a couple of pieces of the puzzle that are still missing. And if we finally make those connections, it'd be a great town. And we're starting to do that in all sorts of ways. As for instance, it's actually trying to create. I always say it is. We're the largest small town in the Hudson Valley, and by that I mean we're a big town, but we want to give it the small town feel. So we're doing things to try to create that type of a feeling and atmosphere in the town. And how do we do that? Well, we do that through our activities. We do that through our architecture. And we do that through our aesthetics, and we're starting that process. As for instance, the small town feel is a fireman's parade, the fireman's carnival. It happens to be our Christmas or holiday lights parade, which we started under my administration. This year we're going to do a New Year's Eve ball drop. What you do is you want to create the feeling of community. The spirit of community and plug in, have available both the physical and aesthetics that promote that. And it's easily, it's not that difficult to do, but you have to make the effort to do it. You have to create the vision, and you have to take the steps and lay the regulatory foundation for it to occur. And we're starting to do that.
Now, the composition of the present town board, it's about equal, isn't it?
It's three Republicans, two Democrats.
And there's an election for how many seats coming up?
There is three seats coming up, which is my seat, Susan Siegel's seat, and Tommy Diana's seat.
Okay.
So two Republicans and one Democrat are up for re-election, and Vishnu Patel, which is a Democrat on the board, is challenging me for supervisor.
No, he will remain on the board should he lose the challenge.
Yes,
is that true?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, but the others go off if they lose.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
At the groundbreaking for the St. Mary's Outreach Center, you said some very nice things about the St. Mary's Rector, Mother Claire Woodley. Would you repeat them for our audience?
Yeah, you know what? Mother Claire is. I mentioned how, one of the hidden treasures in Yorktown is Mother Claire, and I really got to know her as being supervisor, and I've got to work with her because we started this Yorktown Organizations United, which is a community foundation group to strengthen our not-for-profits, our faith-based, military, charitable volunteer organizations within the town, so they can share resources in both hopefully financial at one time and also volunteer resources and just whatever resources they have to bring to bear, which a lot of these type of groups need that are very very similar in terms of their demands. I met Mother Claire through that and actually met her and hit it off with her. She's an extremely vivacious woman. She's enthusiastic as anybody I've ever met in my life. And she's just great. And they do such great work over there. I explain it as, you know, we all look for God's love in our life, and we to be reaffirmed in that, because that's what gives us strength, that's what gives us courage, to tackle the things that life does have a tendency to hand out to us. So the food pantry up there, to me, emulates that divine love by giving to those that not only need the services, but more importantly, reaffirms them as really God's children, and worthy of our attention and our love, and you see it with the patrons that do visit the pantry. They're at peace. They're welcomed, and you look at them. They know they're comforted, and they feel that love. And I think that's a very important thing for all of us in our daily lives to try to emulate as much as we possibly can. And they do a great job of it up there. So it's a wonderful thing to see.
Yeah, Barbara McMullen and I worked there on Saturday mornings, and we and all the volunteers get more out of being there than the people that we're giving to, because there's just a wonderful spirit, as you pointed out. The other thing is that the Outreach Center is really non-denominational. The Northern Westchester Jewish Services work out of there. AA meetings work out of there. It's it's giving something to all the community, not to just the Episcopalians or Christians or whoever. Now, I think that's very important.
Yeah, but you can see it on the faces of the patrons that are there. That idea of feeling cradled by someone is very important. I mean, we all need it in our lives. I don't care where you are in the socioeconomic grid, so to speak, doesn't really make much difference. You need that feeling of being, of reaffirmation, your humanity reaffirmed, and I think those acts of charity do that, not only for those that are giving the charity, but those at the receiving end as well. So it's a very, very, very important thing for everyone involved, and it's a great thing to see. And it's you know, it's remarkable that you would think, you know, that even in our community and it's all its affluence, there's still those that are very much in need. So it's I think it's a wonderful. She's a great, and she's just, you know, full of enthusiasm. She just it's great to see, and it's a great place. And you know, we wish him nothing but the best and great success.
Yeah, Mother Claire and the former pastor Elizabeth Van Seton, Tom Sandy, they were very big in building the ecumenical group with all of the religions in the area, all of the various things. But that worked out very well.
I think it's extremely important. You know, it's again, you know, when you talk about a community, and this is what, you know, this is the way I try to approach, you know, my task as supervisor. We're all part of the fabric of the community, and we all greatly impact each other and have influence over each other, and we can either make things, we can create a pattern that's beautiful, or we can create a pattern that's dysfunctional. And so the thing is, each one of these threads, you know, need to be carefully interwoven into each other. So you really have, you know, a beautiful community at the end of the day. So they're all important, and you know, the town can, as a municipal corporation, has its limitations as to what it can do and can't do. But you certainly can create an atmosphere and a local ethos that says something about your town, and that's that is very as important as it is to do this laborious task of figuring out where your revenue is coming and what the taxes are going to be and where you got to scrimp and save and where you spend your money. I mean, all the, you know, the nuts and bolts and the practical aspects of running a town is one thing, but it's also creating the right spirit. And really finding, you know, a way to interweave all these different other aspects of your town life to make Yorktown truly an enriching place to live.
Oh, you also told me that night that you're back playing basketball. I remember you telling me years ago when you were hobbling around playing crutches that it was over. When did you get back playing? When do you play? And what's the competition like? You may give me a hope.
Yeah, well, look, you know what? I'm probably one of the oldest guys on the court, so, which is good and bad. So I still hobble. My knee, you know, has been holding up so far, but between my shoulders and my hips and everything else. But I love the game. I love playing the game, and we make a good run. We play. You can play at the high school on Wednesday nights, but also at Solaris on Monday nights, and it's a bunch of guys. And the range is, you know, I play with my son too, you know, so it's from and everybody in between, and it's a good. You get a good run. Everybody understands. Everybody's got to be up to go to work in the morning, so you try not to. You try to keep the elbows to a minimum, but I've got my bumps and bruises even playing at Solaris. But my game's getting back a little bit, but I certainly can't get up and down the court like I used to.
But, where was Solaris, Mike?
It's over by the YCC. It's right in Heights, in the Heights area.
Okay. And what
Veterans.
Is it? And what is it? Is it a gym?
Sports club. Yeah. Solaris Sports Club. Yeah.
Okay. And so, and you played at Yorktown High School also on Wednesday
nights? Yeah, I haven't gotten over there. My understanding is they play Wednesday. They have an open gym on Wednesday nights. But I have right now with my schedule between, you know, Wednesday nights are booked with this and that, you know, I've got town board meetings Tuesday night, so I don't have a lot of free time. But Monday night I kind of made a vow that I'm reserving that to playing hoops. So.
We were just on vacation in North Wildwood, New Jersey, and the people that own the motel that we stay at have become friends. The fellow, Steve Lawrence, but not the singer, played for Furman College. He's presently in his 70s, and in July he goes out to Minneapolis to to play in the Senior Olympics, 3-on-3, with refs, with the 3-point line, with everything, and it's in the over 70 league. So I said, boy, if he can do that, why aren't I out playing? You know?
Yeah. Well, you know what? It's funny. My shoulders are bothering me much more so than my knee. So I got, but I'm at the gym a few nights a week, and the reason being is just to try to keep myself limber, you know, and keep the cobwebs away, and it's a great stress relief too. I mean that it really is more than anything else. So,
well, when our mutual orthopedist Steve Small told me that I had the arthritis in my knees, I said, why? He said, because they weren't warranted for 100,000 jump shots. So,
well, that's who he's. We used to play with him. And
oh yeah,
right?
Sure.
Yeah, and the night I blew my knee out, and that's I'm gonna date myself. That's 25 years ago, I think it was out when I was playing with Steve, and he ended up was kind enough to pick me up off the basketball floor and drove me to Hudson Valley, where he escorted me into the emergency room and got me X-rayed and everything else. So it was
that was 25 years ago. Oh, so I was way off with the 15 years. I'm talking 25.
Yeah, because I'm going to do the math right now. But I know how old I was back then, and I know how old I am now. And it was 26 years ago.
Wow.
So yeah, it goes by a lot quicker than you know.
So what's next for Michael Grace? Is there higher office? I know that Bob Tendy's going to run the Putnam County DA. Is there anything like that in your future?
No, you know what? I've got my things to do here still. My first term as supervisor, we got a lot done. And the criticism of my first term was everybody's, you're moving too fast. Don't you think you got to slow things down a little bit? And I always thought that, took that as a great compliment. That I was moving too fast, because I never heard that kind of criticism leveled at a governmental entity ever. So I was very happy about that. But the last year and a half, because of elections and split boards and all sorts of stuff, and the acrimony that we talked about or alluded to earlier, things kind of gotten bogged down. We're now back to where I have we have a majority on the board, and with that majority, we're starting to move ahead again. And there's just certain things that I do want to accomplish. I want to get done for the reasons why I got involved in the first place. So I'd like to see them back on track and moving ahead. And then I'll take it for one step at a time. I think at this point, I'm going through a different period of life. My kids are getting older. They're growing up. They're going out on their own. I'm looking at being an empty nester in some respects. I'm also looking to see them successfully launched. So, you know, all things are, a little bit in flux, and I'll take one step at a time. But at this point, it's focusing on running for re-election.
How do you handle both the, as you mentioned, a 24-hour-a-day job as town supervisor and the private practice? I know that that's been one of the things that Susan Siegel's criticize you about. How do you respond to that?
Well, you know what? I mean, they unfortunately haven't taken a vacation in 3 years, and most of the time I'm in my office on weekends, and most of my days are 12 or 14 hour days, and it's just going back and forth between one thing and the other, and it's not unusual in my life to be kind of stretched that thin. I did it when I think it's been kind of on that treadmill since I went to law school, because I went to law school at Fordham, and I went at night and I worked on Wall Street during the day. So back then it was up at in the office at Kidder Peabody at 8, and by the time I completed my day, got home and through the door at night, it was midnight, and that was a long day on Wall Street and a few hours at Lincoln Center at the law school. So it's actually, you know, one thing balances the other, one's an offset to the other, one causes the other to be enriched, so it works out.
I know that game, the Wall Street early in the morning, late at night. We've touched a lot of bases. What else would you like our audience to know about Michael Grace?
Oh, I don't know. Well, you know what? You've gotten all the highlights. You know what? It's as far as I'm concerned, you know, I'm hoping you know, to continue to move Yorktown in the right direction, and I also looking forward to keeping up and having an enriched life. The only other thing I could tell you is that I'm a motorhead as well. So that's one of the things I like to enjoy. I have a couple of old classic cars, and when I'm not doing anything else, my therapy is to be busting my knuckles under the hood of one of my old cars. So I do enjoy that as well.
That's interesting. The fellow who we were sang with, who I mentioned, is going to the Senior Olympics, has in tip-top shape, and he rides them around down in North Wildwood to play golf. There's an Austin Healey, and he has a Model A Ford.
Yeah, I have an old 1940 Chevy pickup truck, which is chrome yellow with black fenders, that I drive around town in the parades. I have a 68 Camaro RS convertible, white one, which I drive in the parades. And this past Memorial Day parade, my 72 Buick GS convertible was in that. And I have a couple of old, you know, old imports too as well. So I love working on them.
Pagnatelli's into all that too. Back to when he ran Traveler's Rest. He's a car guy too.
Yeah, it's so fun. It's they don't talk back to you. That's a nice thing.
And you can't tell if they're a Democrat or Republican, right? They're all Republican cars, right?
Well, you know what. With my Camaro is definitely Republican. It's a high end with headers on it, so you hear it coming.
Thank you very much, Michael.
All right, Johnny, good to talk to you, and you know, hopefully I'll see you around and maybe on the court, right?
Right. A bit of the commercial information. My column appears weekly in the West as a Guardian, along with regular columns by ex-congressperson and co-chair of the 9/11 Commission, Lee Hamilton, critic John Simon, historian Daniel Pipes. The West as a Guardian is available in print format and online at www.westasaguardian.com. My books are available at Amazon, and I blog at johnmack13.johnmackrants.com. And the words the Mets radio announcer Howie Rose after the Mets win, put it in a book. Go to my website, www.johnmack13.com, for URLs to previous shows, and tune in next week for my conversation with mystery writer Andrew Gross. Until then, as he used to say in the old neighborhood, see ya. Whoa, Silver. Whoa, 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 Silver. Thank you very much, Mike.